Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
John Davis and Orlando Franklin filling in for Stoke and Zach today. Big O. Pro Football Talk put out an article earlier this morning that alleges Tyreek Hill's name came up in trade talks at the start of free agency. It was according to Jay Glazer. He said, in my mailbag at The Athletic, Jay Glazer mentions that he heard rumblings that Hill's name was being mentioned in trade talks earlier this offseason. Again, the current investigation makes that a moot point for now, but it's worth filing away for several reasons. Orlando, obviously, Tyreek Hill, we don't really know. He's maybe being investigated for something going on with his kid. He's got a history there of not being the best guy when it comes to that. But do you buy, I mean, you know, huge contract coming up. He's going to be up for a huge deal. Off the field issues, do you buy this, that the Chiefs were looking to move this dude, Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, I absolutely buy it. When I look at a guy that's getting ready to, you know, demand a bunch of money, you know, and you could trade him away and get some great value for him, absolutely I buy it. I mean, the Chiefs right now, they think they got all their problems solved. You know, we got Patrick Mahomes. Right. You know, we could plug and play guys in here. This guy threw 50 touchdowns last year. We could plug and play guys on offense for the next couple years. He's going to make everybody else around him better. You know, we found our guy that's going to be here, and he's literally going to be like a Peyton Manning mind, a Tom Brady mind later on in his career where guys they might not have been the most talented or guys that might have been with other teams. Now you could get him here on a discount to play with Patrick Mahomes, you know. And when we were just talking the last segment, we're talking about having a complete team. Well, we already know that the Kansas City Chiefs, their defense, it's in shambles. I mean, they got Chris Jones, great. You got Tyrann Mathieu, great. I mean, you got who else did they got? Ogletree?
Not much, really. I mean, nobody worth noting. Because D. Ford's gone, Justin Houston's gone.
I mean,
gone,
who else is going to rush the passer? I mean, because when everybody realizes that they only got to worry about Chris Jones, guess what? Chris Jones is going to have a fit. You're going to have two and three guys touching him each and every play. So if you can get the capital for a guy like Tyreek Hill, especially when you know that you're going to have to break the bank to pay him, but then also you got the guy that's going to be coming up that we heard during the last season, hey, Patrick Mahomes could be the first $200 million guy in the NFL. So, right. I mean, you know you got to pay him at some point. You don't want to disrespect him and not come to a negotiation or start negotiation talks with him when you can. And you don't want him to ever think that he's not welcome or not wanted out there in Kansas City. So you got to look at it and you got to take your wins when you can take them. I mean, that's what happens when you have great teams. All of a sudden, you can't retain guys, and guys hit free agency and they're going to get paid other places. So if you could trade a guy like Tyreek Hill, why not? But also, the other thing that I was thinking about when I heard this talk, I thought it was crazy as well. But then I remembered what happened last year with Kareem Hunt and his off-the-field issues.
Right, right.
And then how Kansas City basically stood up and said, hey, you know what? We're not going to tolerate this. And they released him. So I could have seen them saying, hey, well, let's not release this guy. Kareem Hunt, we released him. We probably could have maybe traded him. Let's see if we could shop Tyreek Hill and get something back, because this is a guy that we did draft, and see if we could get something out the deal. But also, it's sending a message saying, hey, if that's what you're going to do, we're not going to keep you in this locker room, and we're not going to stand for this. We're not going to stand for the off-the-field issues and not doing what you're supposed to do in this Chiefs organization.
Right. It's John Davis, Orlando Franklin, filling in for the guys today. We're talking Tyreek Hill, a report today that his name had maybe come up in trade rumors earlier this year. The big thing with the Kareem Hunt thing, when they released him, a lot of it was because he lied to the Chiefs about what was going on. So I wonder if they'll like loophole that with Tyreek and be like, well, he was very upfront with us. You know what I mean? And like look for a reason to not. But
I mean, you sent the clear message with Kareem Hunt, and you said, hey, you know what? We're not going to tolerate guys that are not doing the right thing off the field in this community and in this organization. So
if he did what he's being what's being talked about, then he's got to go.
Exactly.
I mean, he's got to go.
Exactly. If he honestly did what people have speculated, what people have said that he did, he needs to go. If you don't, Now you're sending mixed signals. And for other people on that team, I don't even know, like, what signals do you believe? Like, how do you believe? These are two Pro Bowl-type players.
Yeah,
you know?
Tyreek Hill and Kareem
Hunt was a Pro Bowler. You know, it's just like, whoa. And now Tyreek Hill's a Pro Bowler, and it's just like, well, what are we doing here? Are we not going to get rid of him as well? So the Chiefs got to figure that out, because no matter what, you can, not only do you have to worry about Tyreek Hill, but you also got to worry about 52 other people, and you got to worry about these guys that you're going to draft in this year's draft and moving forward as well. Because when you create turmoil and you create an atmosphere where guys are going to be treated differently, now you get situations like you're seeing in Pittsburgh where Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, they all want to talk about the owner. They want to talk about Big Ben. They want to talk about the head coach, because they've been getting a bunch of mixed signals. Everybody's not treated the exact same way. But when you come in and you could be a player's coach and you could be likable and you could be a player's organization. The organization could be liked, the head coach, the GM, the owner. You all could be liked, but you all got to treat everybody the exact same way. So now everybody knows, hey, certain things are not tolerated and certain things are, and if I do certain things, not only will I lose my job, but I'm just not going to be around this team at all no more. I'm going to have to move on. I'm going to have to go fight for my life to go try to get on another team.
They got to run a tight ship over there. But if Tyreek Hill leaves the division, whether it be because he's cut, he's traded, whatever, what does this mean for the Broncos?
I'd be super excited.
Yeah, I'd love to have Tyreek Hill on it. The dude's uncoverable.
Yeah,
I mean, he's legitimately uncoverable.
He's a guy that no matter what, he could get behind any cornerback in this league. Mm-hmm. He demands double coverage because you don't know if your cornerback is going to be able to keep up with him. So you always have to have a safety spying and being ready to go over the top to create that extra help, because you can't just put anybody on him and say, hey, you know what? You got to go man to man with the guy that might be the fastest person or one of the fastest people in the league. And also this quarterback has the strength to throw the ball 65 yards. But no, not only that, this guy gets to run forward, and you got to start running backwards. So he's going to catch up to you and have an opportunity each and every play to actually run past you.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we didn't have to play him. But the best case scenario, honestly, is that nobody gets hurt in real life, honestly. Like, I don't want that to happen for him. That be the reason he leaves the division, you know, if that makes sense. But Tyreek Hill, it's definitely something to watch. The news hasn't really come out yet. Is it possible for this Denver Broncos star to get even better? That's next. John Davis, Orlando Franklin, filling in for Stokely and Zach today. Oh, earlier this morning, Pritchard and Cecil, excuse me, were talking about Philip Lindsay, and they were talking about how great he is. But, you know, after such a great rookie season, they think he can get even better.
Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, the running game, it needs to be effective. It needs to be something that's threatening.
He had 9 rushing touchdowns as a rookie.
You sound surprised by that you said that.
No. I'm just saying, like, that's the starting point. Philip Lindsay's not done. This isn't all Philip Lindsay can be. This isn't like Daffy Duck and a magic trick. He can only do it once. His starting point is 1,000 yards and 9 rushing touchdowns.
With a makeshift offensive line.
Right. That everyone wants to replace and redo.
See, you're starting to get excited about the Broncos running game.
Yes. Damn Skippy.
See? Okay, Broncos country, get excited. Forget the quarterback. Focus on the running game. Focus on the star that you already have.
Orlando, after such a magical, almost underdog, amazing season where Philip Lindsay was one of the most dominant players in the AFC, not just the Broncos, can he get even better?
Yeah, absolutely he can get better. He already got better when they got a better offensive line coach. He already got better when we got a better offensive coordinator. So, I mean, he's going to get better. I mean, the thing that you got to love about Philip Lindsay is in his first year, not his second, not his third, he took it upon himself in his first year to really understand the blocking schemes and what his offensive line and what his tight ends were trying to get accomplished. And when you're able to do that at the running back position, now you get a really good feel for the game. Earlier in the game, where now you have those explosive plays because you're just so in tune with what that offensive line is doing and knowing the difference between zone schemes and power schemes and where to cut the ball back and where you cannot go because that's the free runner. that's what Phillip Lindsay brought to the table last year in his rookie year. He literally sat down and he learned that stuff where now it just made him a better player. But with a better offensive line coach, with a better offensive coordinator, he's going to get it better, a lot better as well. You know, the best thing that we saw, and I always give this example, is when I watched Sean McVay and I watched the Los Angeles Rams and I watched, they have that jet sweep motion. Literally, they run that motion probably 12 times a game. And, it's just like, oh, here comes the jet sweep motion again. But they run so many different things off of it now where it always keeps the defense guessing. With Phillip Lindsay and this offense last year and Bill Musgrave, there wasn't one thing that we saw that they ran a bunch of different things off of it. The offense was so predictable. So the more that you can make things look the same in this league and have different variations off of it, the better you're going to be, especially on offense. And that's what Rick Scangarello is going to bring into here, because we've seen that last year with Kyle Shanahan. And we saw Rick Scangarello the last couple years work under Kyle Shanahan. So he's going to be able to bring that type of offense in here where it's going to look the same, but you're going to have different variations. And now when you got a guy like Phillip Lindsay that you already know is willing to put the time in and willing to put the work to fully understand how a play is actually developing and the whole blocking scheme of it, now that's when you have a greater opportunity to create more explosive plays. So he's definitely going to be better this year because of it.
And you're talking about the offensive play calling too. The play that you always wanted every week, when I would say to you, I'd say, Orlando, what are the keys to the Broncos winning? Phillip Lindsay in the screen game.
Yeah, Phillip Lindsay in the screen game.
They refused to do it last year.
But yeah, they absolutely refused to do it. And we saw how dynamic it could be when they played against the Washington Redskins here. When he took it to the house. But literally, we never saw it again.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, when you bring in a guy like Rick Scangarello, now he is younger, more innovative, so there's other ways to do things. When you have older guys like Bill Musgrave, they only believe, hey, there's one way to do things. It's either you have one running back in by himself, or you have a running back and a fullback. Well, now we know Rick Scangarello is going to be more innovative, and we're going to see things that we saw in San Francisco. We're going to see things that we saw in with the Los Angeles Rams, and that's a two-back set. You'll see they're two top backs. Yep. They'll be in the game at the same time. I mean, that creates mismatches itself right there. And now you're going to be able to use Phillip Lindsay in the passing game, something that the Broncos, I don't know, for whatever reason, they did not seem like they were willing to do last year. Yeah, you saw him come out the backfield and catch little swing routes, and he was the check down the case. But no, I want to see Phillip Lindsay. I want to see the Broncos week one this year. Phillip Lindsay, Royce Freeman break the huddle. They're in a split formation, and Joe Flacco's in the shotgun. And now I want to see us motion out Phillip Lindsay to dictate if it's zone or man-to-man coverage, and now put him in that slot position. I want to see Phillip Lindsay run routes out of that position, where now you're also taking hits off of his body, but also putting him in space on a person that's going to be a little bit slower than him, a little bit less quick. And now he's going to have an opportunity to really expose those guys out there in space.
Yeah, and last year, so we're talking the passing, he can become a dynamic almost receiver on this offense. But last year, before the Broncos became completely one-dimensional and teams could stack the box, he was leading the league in yards per carry. It was something crazy. So if he can build off the running game and they can use him in more spots, he's gonna be a big problem for a lot of people. Orlando, you have experience with this, the injury.
Yeah.
The injury that you've had this injury, Phillip Lindsay, in the Raiders game. What is the injury?
It's a TFC and scaphoid. So basically it's some ligament damage, but also a break in your wrist.
In the rib. And so the recovery, because Shane Ray had something similar, and for my money, that kind of derailed his career a little bit. So you've had it, you've recovered from it. Can we expect Phillip Lindsay back?
I fully expect him back. I mean, the difference between Phillip Lindsay and offensive linemen that like me or a guy like Shane Ray is, with that injury, you're in a cast for about 6 weeks, then you're in a splint for 6 weeks. Phillip Lindsay doesn't have to use his wrist each and every play. I mean, offensive linemen, you're sitting there and that you're throwing punches each and every time. So I remember the following season, although I didn't miss any games, that there would be games that it was aching and it was hurting because I was sitting there and I got to use my hands each and every play to shock guys and be able to lock
even
them out.
Months after the injury.
Yeah. So, I mean, with Shane Ray, it was the exact same thing. He has to be able to now go through that pain even after having surgery now and deal with that stiffness and tightness because literally you're in a cast for 6 weeks and not being able to move that wrist at all and then going into a splint, and that's when you start getting back your mobility. But for a guy like Shane Ray, the reason why he struggled is because every play, Shane Ray has to use his hands each and every play. And if he doesn't use his hands and literally hit that offensive lineman and extend, Shane Ray's a smaller guy, so he's not going to have the production if he doesn't use his hands. It starts with his hands. So that's why we saw the big drop-off with Shane Ray. Well, Phillip Lindsay, he might use his hands to throw a stiff arm or two out there, but he's literally getting the ball in one hand. He's going to be able to hold the ball and secure it, and then he's going to run with the ball, use his eyes, use his legs, use his quickness in order to create separation and create dynamic plays. It's completely different because he's not going to use his hand each and every play now to be blocking. Now, there will be times that he has to block. And, you know, if Phillip Lindsay's your first and second down back like he was this year, you know, that's when, you know, Devontae Booker comes in or Royce Freeman comes in on third down, worse, more obvious passing down situations where, and they're also thicker running backs where now they're able to pick up the blitzer. You don't want to see Phillip Lindsay at 190 pounds picking up linebackers day in and day out when they're coming on blitzes. So, I think he'd be absolutely fine with the injury, and it's going to suck, I mean, to get back from it because it creates tightness and being in that cast, but he shouldn't have no hiccups in his recovery.
I hope not, Orlando. And if he does, I'm going to get mad at you for getting my hopes up about it. So, Orlando, Ollie Frazier, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vince McMahon, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, D-Mac, Emmanuel Sanders. It's going down today. You know both the guys. You know both these guys. 5 o'clock today. You won't want to miss it right here on The Fan. Emmanuel Sanders will be in studio to go face to face with D-Mac. I bet if he sees Orlando, he'll go, "Who are you again?" But it's good. Do not miss it today. 5 o'clock, Emmanuel, D-Mac in studio. It's going to be amazing. This former Denver Broncos player, Super Bowl 50 champion, was scooped up by another team. Should the Broncos have brought him back? That's next. John Davis, Orlando Franklin, filling in today for Stokely and Zach. We got a little March Madness. Orlando's over here. He's picked every game wrong so far. So, not having the best bracket. You've got them all wrong.
Why do you always choose to lie on me, dude? I got the Louisville versus Minnesota game wrong, and I'm sure I wasn't the only person that did.
I'm sure a lot of people got
that wrong. But the only issue is I had Louisville beating Michigan State in the second round. So, now I'm just watching like, you got to be kidding me.
We'll take that L on the way out.
So we got Bradley playing Michigan State. I have Bradley winning the whole thing in my bracket.
Hey, well, you might be screwed after today. So
I really believe in Bradley. I call him Brad for sure. I don't even know who Bradley is. I don't have him winning my bracket.
Where are they?
I have no idea. I've never Bradley. It's just a first name. I hope they win it all. They got to be like, congratulations, Bradley.
Yeah.
But shout out to Richie, who's here. He's a board op here at The Fan, Michigan State alum. So.
If they lose to Bradley.
Bradley's in Philadelphia. Oh, I don't want any smoke with those fans. They don't. Philadelphia fans bring it. Big O, best of luck on your bracket. Even though you've gotten them all wrong so far.
I got one wrong, but okay.
You'll get more wrong.
I'm sure I will because I had Louisville beating Michigan State in the second round. So I'm sure I will be. So, can you leave me alone about me and my bracket, please?
I'll leave you in your bracket alone. Oh, Bradley's in Illinois. Apologies to people from Illinois, Philadelphia, and Bradley that I've gotten all of that wrong so far. Anyways, Orlando, Trevor Siemian, Super Bowl 50 champion quarterback. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Trevor Siemian, scooped up by the Jets yesterday. Zach and D-Mac were talking like he's Joe Montana and the Broncos should have brought him back. Should the Broncos have brought back Trevor Siemian?
No, you got Joe Flacco. I mean, why?
Who cares?
Why would you? I mean, he got what, a 1 year deal for $2 million?
Yeah,
and it was $3 million with incentives. I'm just not bringing him back for the fact of towards Trevor's end of his career here, his end of his time here. it almost became like it looked like he was more like Case Keenum-ish, like on third downs, just not willing to go out there and compete on third downs and throw the ball down the field. So he's not a guy that I would have been pounding on the table for and say, hey, we got to bring this guy back.
Right. Even as a backup now, and I understand Zach makes a good point a lot that, you know, this day and age, you do have to have a good backup. And two of the three Broncos Super Bowl championships, they had a backup play at least four games in 1998 with Bubby Brister, 2015 with Brock. I just don't think Trevor Siemian's a good enough backup to come in and win you those games.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I agree. So
it's just like it doesn't matter. But they did re-sign Kevin Hogan today.
Yeah.
Is a backup. Do you like the move? Do you think they still need to bring another backup back in there?
I like the move because Kevin Hogan has familiarity with the team, was on this team last year, but he also is going to have a real opportunity to get better with Rick Scangarello. You know, Kevin Hogan was a guy on the edge of that roster, and we saw Nick Mullins was a guy that was a guy on that edge of the roster out there with San Francisco, you know. And Rick Scangarello, there's rumors to be that, you know, he's the quarterback whisperer, and he's heavily involved in the development of these young quarterbacks. So I like the Hogan move. It's a cheap move. It's not going to cost you a lot, and it's definitely cheaper than it would have been to bring it in Trevor Siemian.
Yeah, the Hogan movie was here. You and I watched the Facebook Live. It's John Davis, Orlando Franklin. We're talking about the Broncos' backup quarterback situation. They re-signed Kevin Hogan today. You and I watched the Facebook Live when Kevin Hogan was with the Washington Redskins last preseason.
Yeah.
And, man, it was like watching 2013 Peyton Manning out there. The guy was, I know it was third-string defense, but the guy was balling all over the place. It was obviously at the end of a preseason game.
But also, you got to look at this, right?
He started in the NFL, too.
Yeah, he has. But the way I look at it is, you brought in Kevin Hogan. What else happened when you brought in Kevin Hogan last year? You decided to cut Paxton Lynch.
Mm.
So, and he's a lot cheaper than Trevor Siemian is. And so you stood up for a guy and brought him in that you ended up cutting your first-round quarterback for because you said, hey, you know what? As a third string quarterback for the team moving forward, this guy has more upside than our guy that we drafted 2 years ago in the first round. So why would we now not continue that going down that road and continue to see if he could develop now in a different scheme that's going to be a lot more explosive? It's going to have a lot more window dressing on it. So it's going to be able to create the smoke and screen, the smoke and mirrors that you need in today's NFL where, I mean, in order to be successful. So I like the Kevin Hogan move. If I was the Broncos, I would have did the exact same thing. Trevor Siemian, do I like him? Do I think that he played well in 2016? Absolutely. You know, goes 9-7. I thought he played
right,
amazing.
He's not bad. I don't know what it would have done bringing him back.
When you're strapped for cash, I mean, I'd rather bring in Kevin Hogan at a cheaper salary than a guy like Trevor Siemian that you know that, hey, it's going to cost you a little bit more. I mean, that money could go somewhere else where this team really needs some other pieces right now as well.
Now, to be fair, he is a Super Bowl win. Trevor Siemian is a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
How many snaps did he play that year?
I don't know, but he walked away with one Super Bowl ring.
Oh, yeah.
It's one more than me. It's one more than Dan Marino.
It's one more than me, too.
It is three less than Joe Montana, so maybe I'm overrating him a little bit. Orlando, earlier this week, I was listening to you. Great job all week you've done. You think maybe they should have looked at bringing Chad Kelly back? Why?
Look what he got. I mean, the guy got probation. You know, like,
so you sign him because he's got a good lawyer?
He got probation. I just thought that the Broncos pulled the trigger a little bit prematurely on that. And, you know, there was other ways to keep him around. It wasn't like he went in the house and assaulted anybody. He had a bad night. And
it's a really bad night that Chad Kelly had.
Yeah, it was a bad night. It 100% was a bad night. But we also have guys in the league like Joe Mixon. We also have guys like Kareem Hunt in the league.
That's a great point.
In the league right now like Reuben Foster that you go to. Reuben Foster's having a bad night the night before a game. Leaving from San Francisco, yeah. Having that bad night in Florida.
On a road trip,
yeah.
He had a bad night, not even where he lived. Okay, so you think what he did, that we've seen other guys come back.
Yeah, I've seen other guys come back from it. And, you know, I that would have been a guy that I would have gave a look at. I mean, because you already said, hey, you know what? We believe in this guy and we're going to draft him. I mean, although it was Mr. Irrelevant, but he still drafted him. And at one point last year, there was real talks of benching Case Keenum, your quarterback that you went out and paid $18 million to that year. Fully guaranteed that. Guaranteed, what was it, $25 million over 2 years that at one point last year you're saying, hey, Chad Kelly could be the guy. And you saw the emotion that his teammates played with. You saw the spark anytime he walked in any of those preseason games. I just think the Broncos should have, you know, waited a little bit and seen how the situation could have developed. There was other things that they could have did and not just flat out cut him. I think it was added. He got cut because of the added things that went on as well. You know, the party that guys are waving around a bag where it's thought to be cocaine. And then the other issues of the whole losing season and things are not going the right way. The Broncos could have easily put him on the not unable to participate list, and they could have suspended him for the rest of the season and waited this thing out to see how it developed and see exactly where it went.
I would have rather Trevor Siemian come back than Chad Kelly. Okay. It was a bad night, and just because other guys have gotten allowed back in doesn't necessarily mean he should get the same. You do a bad thing, there's consequences. But if Chad Kelly comes back, I do agree with you. He kind of raises his teammates' emotion when he gets in there. He wants back in. Maybe he gets a second chance. Which Broncos rookie from last season has to take the big leap this year for the Broncos to be successful? That's next. John Davis and Orlando Franklin. Filling in for Stokely and Zach today on this Thursday. Watching the tournament is Orlando, who had Bradley over Michigan State, which is a really weird one. I don't know why you did that. But we got...
Did I really, though?
Yeah, man. You picked Bradley. But, hey, if it's an upset, you're going to look like a genius.
Well, okay. Well, that's not the case. I didn't pick them, but...
But you do have Michigan State losing to who?
I have Michigan State winning today.
That's all that matters.
I have Michigan State winning today, beating Bradley.
I've got Bradley again taking the whole tournament. I put down all my savings on it. You think that was a good move?
Not a good move, but hey, if they do win the whole tournament, I'm sure you'd make a ton of money.
Yeah, I'll take you out for a steak.
That's it? It would have to be a little bit more than that. I need like a Vegas trip, like a weekend trip.
You need a Vegas trip.
Yeah, if you're putting your savings down, I mean, think about the odds.
On Bradley?
Think about the odds of that. Of so I winning the whole you. Thing, and they do, and they win it.
Okay, so...
I mean, we're talking like hundreds of thousands.
So my money's your money type thing. We're going to live like that now?
Yeah, your money's my money. My money's not your money.
Well, that's not fair. That's not fair. But I hope everybody's having a good time with the bracket. Your first bracket ever. You've been enjoying it, Orlando?
Yeah, no, definitely. Been enjoying watching the few games that we've been able to see so far, but I feel like I'm so much more invested than I normally am, because literally, like, year after year, I wouldn't even watch the first round.
Right.
Like, I'd start watching it about a week into this, you know, and then that's when I start paying attention. But now it's like, this morning I find myself getting up and turning the TV on at 10 a.m. to see what's going on with the bracket. So now I feel like I'm way too invested.
It's weird, too. You have Vermont winning the whole thing. They're like a 14 seed. I have no idea why.
Winning the whole thing.
No, you have Vermont beating Duke. I've seen your bracket. You have Vermont 14 seed beating Duke.
You've seen my bracket. Where did you see my bracket?
You send me everything because we're best friends. Because we're best friends. Orlando. The rookie class last year for the Denver Broncos, everybody was super duper high on it, rightfully so. A lot of reasons to get excited. Phillip Lindsay, Bradley Chubb, we obviously know they're great. I'm going to take these two guys out of the question. Outside of Bradley Chubb and Phillip Lindsay, which rookie from last year needs to take the biggest step for the Broncos in 2019?
I'm going to go with Courtland Sutton.
Courtland Sutton.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Courtland Sutton.
Big baller shot caller. Yeah,
last year, played in 16 games, had 42 receptions. For 704 yards. It was a quiet 704 yards, too.
I didn't know it was that high. I'm surprised it was that high.
I didn't know it was that high either. But the reason why I'm going to say that he needs to take the biggest leap this year for the Broncos, because on those 42 receptions, he had 84 targets. So he was 50% in when the ball was targeted at him. For a guy that has that big of a body frame and a guy that you also that could run fast, jump high, and we always talk about it. If the NFL, the 2018 NFL draft was redone right now, Courtland Sutton would have been a first round pick.
Absolutely.
So for a guy with that much potential, you cannot be catching one out of two balls that are thrown your way. You cannot be at 50% when you look at how many targets you got compared to how many receptions you got. He is literally at 50%. And he has to take a leap. He's a guy that not only do we think so highly of him, not only was he exposing people in training camp day in and day out, where when we saw what would happen later on in the season with the Demaryius Thomas trade, we were like, well, you know what? Courtland Sutton could be that guy. I mean, it justified it for us, but that's still what happened. The Broncos traded away a guy in Demaryius Thomas that would be in the Broncos. What was that?
The Ring of Fame.
The Ring of Fame, for sure.
Second best receiver in team history.
Has been on the stadium, on the post beside the stadium for years.
Right.
But they traded him away because they saw the potential that Courtland Sutton could have. And when I look at these numbers, like I said, quiet 704 yards, that's awesome. But he needs to do better when we're talking about completion to attempts ratio. We cannot be throwing the ball to Courtland Sutton 10 times in a game and he's only coming down with 5 of them. He's too big. He's too strong. He runs too fast. He has to improve on that.
John Davis, Orlando Franklin, filling in for Stokely and Zach. We're talking which rookie from last year needs to take the biggest step going forward this year. Orlando's telling me it's Courtland Sutton. I do remember it might have been the Jets game. You know, Case wasn't the most accurate guy, but I do remember Courtland having some key drops, too. I mean, there was some key drops. You're right. He had 7. How many touchdowns did he have?
He had 4. Him and Emmanuel Sanders both had 4 last year.
That's got to go up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but now you got a quarterback that's a little bit more accurate in red zone and also tries to throw things a little bit more on the timing, where Case Keenum struggled last year. So that number will go up. But I'm saying what he needs to improve on with. I know the yards will go up. I know the touchdowns will go up. What Courtland needs to improve on is every time he's targeted, you'd have too much of a big body frame to only be 50% on targets.
What were the numbers again? It was 84 targets.
He had 84 targets. He had 42 receptions.
It's exactly 50%.
It's exactly 50%.
A lot of math. We're a couple of mathematicians.
But I mean, look at a guy like Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, last year has 98 targets and 71 receptions.
See, that's huge. If Courtland even gets 15 to 20 more of those catches, he's a 1,000-yard guy.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. So he's got to improve on that. That's something that, you know, hopefully he's honing in on and he's focusing in on. But, I mean, you're the guy. I mean, you heard it last year. Vance Joseph said, you know, those 50-50 jump balls, when we throw it to Courtland, we like to think that it's more 75 to 25. Well, the numbers don't state it. It states that it's 50-50.
It's a 50, no matter what the scenario. Like, it doesn't even have to be a jump ball.
Yeah, it states that it's 50-50.
I like your answer to this question. We're talking about Courtland Sutton. Of all the rookies last year, you need to take the biggest leap this year because the expectations on him are huge, too. Mm. I think outside of Chubb and Phillip Lindsay, he's got the biggest role.
Oh, absolutely.
Of any of these guys.
He's a number two guy. He might have to step into the season day one as a number one guy.
Right.
We don't know exactly how Emmanuel is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then with the Achilles injury, with the wide receiver that's a little bit older, you know, I think the way Emmanuel approaches the game, the way he approaches rehab, I think he's going to be fine. But if he is not fine, you know, Courtland Sutton has got to make sure that he's ready to go. And if Emmanuel Sanders, there's a time later on the season when he needs a rest week and we're not going to play him because that Achilles is bothering him. Courtland's got to be ready to have to step in that role and not miss a beat. So he's got to have production no matter what, week in, week out. Can't happen like last year where, okay, you know what? We trade away DT and then you're flashing and we're loving what we see. And then Emmanuel goes down and it's like, where's Courtland? That can't happen.
Yeah, it felt like we saw more of Deshaun when Emmanuel went down. We saw more flash from Deshaun. But with Courtland, too, you go back to the Bengals game, had a huge deep ball touchdown. We've seen it. It's capable. We just, and what's the biggest leap? Year one to year two.
Yep.
And
that's the biggest
leap.
It starts slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Year one, you know, the hardest thing for these guys that a lot of people don't realize, I mean, you get ready, you go into training camp, your senior year of college, you go into training camp, and then after training camp, you start the season immediately. Then you go and you play your 12 games. And then if you're bowl eligible, you got like 3 weeks or whatever, however long to prepare for your bowl game. And you're constantly practicing each and every week. Then you play in your bowl game and you literally turn right around and sign with the agent within 48 hours. And then if you're training at your school, you train at your school. But now if you're flying out to go train somewhere else, you're flying out to go train somewhere else. And in your draft prep, you're worried about the Wonderlic test. You're doing your draft prep in for your interviews. Now on top of that, you're training each and every day. You got your massages set up. You're pushing your body. You're trying to change your body fat and change how you look before these NFL scouts get their first look at you. Now this is the first time that you're really eating healthy, and then all of a sudden you get drafted, and then you got to show up like you get drafted in the league now, and literally they have you'll come in town to get introduced to the city, then you'll leave for like 2 weeks, and then you'll have like a rookie mini camp, and you jump right into it, and then after the rookie mini camp, you jump right in with the teams, and you're in OTAs, then you have the vet mini camp, and then some rookies have to stay another week after that, and then you go to the rookie symposium during your 5 or 6 week break, and then you jump right back into the season, and you got to play 4 preseason games, 16 regular season games, and which is a total of 20 games in a season, and now you just been really going and going and going for the last 16 months, and now January comes and your rookie season's over and you finally get a chance to decompress and really evaluate what went wrong, what went right in your rookie year, and now you can start really focusing and honing in on your skills after your rookie year. So that's why you're really able to get that big jump from your rookie year to your second year, because you finally had a break over the last 16, no, actually over the last eight, probably in the previous 18 months, yeah, year and a half.
Yeah.
That you never had a break at all. So you finally get that break and you finally could really focus in on your technique and stuff. My rookie year here, man, I was just fighting to stay alive week in, week out. I mean, coming here, being drafted with no offseason, no OTAs, getting drafted, starting at right tackle. We got Kyle Orton out there. Then we decide to switch it a couple games into the season to Tim Tebow. And then we're trying to run a pro-style offense, but that's not working. Then all of a sudden we go to Tebow's offense, and we're literally expanding the playbook every day because Mike McCoy's watching college football tapes, and that's what the offense that we have to implement. And literally, I was literally all over the place and never got a chance to really catch my breath and really figure out what was going on until the season was over.
Buying donuts.
Yeah, I had to buy donuts. What was that? My rookie duties were on Thursdays. I had to bring in we had to do Wendy's, but I never had to do that. One of the equipment guys would just grab my credit card out of my locker, or we had this guy, Adam, that played on the offensive line. He was on practice squad. He'd grab my credit card out of the locker and go and get the spicy chicken sandwiches for the offensive line and the double stacks, the junior double stacks for the offensive line. So I would pay for that on Saturdays. Now I would have to get Waffle House sandwiches during the season. And that became so ridiculous that I was doing it so much. I would literally roll over in my bed on days that I had to do treatment at like 5 a.m. in the morning, because I had to be there for treatment at 6:30, and call Waffle House. And I did it so much that they recognized my voice. So I would like be like, hello. The lady would say hello, and I'd be like, hey, how you guys doing? They'd be like, hey, how you doing, Orlando? How many sandwiches do you need today? And then my husband said, all right, yeah, I'll take 35. And I had to go pick it up and then go into the facility and have it in the meeting rooms. I wasn't in charge of the donuts. Adam did the donuts because that was like the cheapest thing.
This is so involved. This is so...
Yeah, no. I mean, there was a lot of duties that you had to do as a rookie. I mean, that's what you had to do, Waffle House sandwiches on Saturday mornings. And then on top of that, I mean,
this must have been horrible. You're living your dream and getting donuts.
Yeah, it sucked because, like I said, if it snowed, I had to literally check my weather. If it snowed, I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Like a regular person. Yeah, what happened if you missed today? Yeah, what happened if you missed today?
We had a fine system. Yeah, we had a little fine system in the offensive line room. But not only that, this is what I'm trying to tell you guys. Like, that wasn't even the hardest part. The real hardest part of it was...
It doesn't sound hard, so that makes sense.
Okay, whatever you say. Well, the real hard part of it is when you get an hour and about 15 minutes after you do your walkthrough on Saturday and you have an hour and 15 minutes to shower and put a suit on, but you also got to get everybody's order now and go get them Chipotle or Popeyes. And you got to make sure that you're back in time with your suit on before this bus leaves you. There's been many times where I'm running out of the facility and John Fox is already on the bus. And I'm like, hold on, don't leave me. Wait a minute. And literally just scared. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Orlando. That must have been horrible times playing in the NFL, getting donuts and chicken sandwiches. Orlando, we got breaking news in the NFL, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?